This is Michael. You're listening to Models of Masters, and I'm so grateful you're here. I'm breaking down personal stories, learned wisdom, and pieces of insight I hope can help you along your journey. Head over to my website, michaelbecker.org, for much more. And with that, let's get right into the show.
Emotional, financial health, and wellness is really important. And that plays also into really what I seek to do in my professional life is providing balance in the markets. So for example, my view of blockchain and cryptocurrency is that it's special just like any other asset class, and that as a special like any other asset class, it can provide really valuable balance to someone's or to an institution's portfolio wellness, so to speak, that balancing, for example, low correlated assets with each other helps to promote financial wellness amidst all the market craziness of what's going on. That, you know, there's always a downtime for something like real estate or for crypto or for stocks, but the goal is to have them balance out so that you're not getting hit with downtime on multiple different fronts all at once. And it's kind of similar philosophy, in the kind of personal health and wellness space, that if you have, you know, your multiple kind of main priorities going and you get hit on one of them, that you're not kind of, you don't have your legs swept out from under you in your, you know, physical health, mental health, same thing with financial wellness.
Give us a pulse check on the crypto market, just from your personal viewpoint. And obviously we saw this huge spike in popularity 2018, 2019, and into the pandemic with the explosion of crypto. In terms of risk, reward, upside, downside, you mentioned leveraging it as a piece of one's portfolio without, you know, sort of telling people this is what they should do. Just what's your personal take on where the crypto market stands today?
There are a lot of things to say, maybe more than we have scope for even, but there are a few that I think are most relevant. So for one thing, I've been involved in blockchain and crypto for 6+ years now. And so this is now my second and a half, I guess, kind of difficult cycle in what's been going on, where, you know, I saw the kind of the ICO boom and bust happen 2017, 2018. And there was very similar rhetoric going on, you know, during that as was going on in 2021, early 2022. And then, you know, same things going on or similar in terms of the hype, and then similar things going on in terms of kind of some of the FUD, the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that's happening now versus almost exactly 4 years ago today. And so in that regard, I think focusing in general on markets over the medium to long term is something that really most sophisticated investors will suggest. It's something that's, you know, very much easier said than done, but really I think it's important to distinguish between investing prudently and gambling. And, you know, certainly there's been a lot of gambling in the crypto space. There's been a lot of gambling with AI, with you know, stocks, with a lot of different things, but there can be, and there is, and there will be sophisticated risk mitigated investment that happens in any market: real estate, stocks, crypto, gold, bonds, etc. So, relatedly to that point, some other main things that I think are important to consider is that volatility is not something that's kind of new to the markets. It's not specific to crypto. And I think that it often depends on what kind of time horizon you're looking at something at. But for example, just some fun facts, if you will, between about 1980 and about 2020, 10-year treasury yields fell by 97%. So that's these kind of so-called safe haven assets of bonds that are actually, you know, way, way down, and that have been experiencing some very significant volatility during the course of that long downward trajectory. In contrast, something like crypto, which, yes, you know, has had these 60, 70, 80% drawdowns at various points, is something that over a 10, 15 year period, or well, I guess 13-ish year period for the asset class, has been overall net ahead. So, you know, similar thought processes are around investing into multiple different assets that have low correlation with each other, where something like Bitcoin actually was hit way less drastically during the market crash during COVID, was hit way less than the stock market. So these are the types of things that we like to think about in terms of what's going on in blockchain, crypto, and related areas.
Thinking about some of those other areas for that, you know, you could invest in as an individual or an institutional investor, you know, media, software, even real estate. What's your thoughts on where crypto stands relative to those longer standing, more proven asset classes, say over the next decade, and kind of where do you see the market moving in terms of dollars and attention as we kind of evolve into this more technological world?
Yes, it's a number of questions that I think are worth considering there that you raised. So in terms of the evolution of the space, and by that, I mean, this kind of more broadly speaking, you have blockchain, digital assets, Web3, kind of this broader category. In terms of what a lot of experts are looking at for that overall asset class in the next 5 to 10 years, really we're looking at a multi-trillion dollar opportunity, where right now the digital asset market cap is at about a trillion, you know, plus or minus. But a number of experts, including Citi investment analysts and analysts at the World Economic Forum, are predicting a roughly 10 to 15 trillion dollar opportunity for the overall asset class within the next 5 to 10 years. So that's a 10x plus potential increase. In terms of the position of digital assets as related to you know, these other assets we're talking about, real estate, stocks, et cetera, it's an intricate relationship, and there are a couple of things to mention. First off, I would say that cryptocurrency is a bit of a misnomer. So really what we're talking about, we prefer to use the term digital assets, where some of these assets are intended to be used as currencies. Others are intended to be stores of value. Yet others have use cases around next generation file storage or data sharing, or even some of them around improving the real estate markets or the stock market. So there's a bit of an interrelationship that we see between crypto and these other asset classes. But that said, at the end of it, it shows low correlation with a number of these different asset classes, where there's some transformative potential it has for other markets, but it's behaving with a mind of its own, so to speak. And a related point there is that to the theme of balance we were raising earlier on, ultimately what a kind of your Warren Buffett's or your various other investors will say is that they're looking to create a balanced portfolio of diversification of different assets, as well as different asset classes. So, you know, conventional wisdom has been, let's say, to have a, you know, majority in stocks, and then kind of from there, maybe bonds, maybe real estate, then maybe you have precious metals, alternative assets, etc. So within that thought process, we actually conducted some research of our own through a partner organization called ChainVLX, and they were finding that a vast majority of family offices, high net worth individuals, et cetera, they said that they preferred to allocate roughly 4 to 5% of their net worth into crypto. So that's, to that point, is something that, you know, you will hear people in blockchain and crypto say, oh, you know, it's going to replace all currencies, and, you know, and we're all going to kind of have this utopian Shangri-La, and it's all going to be based on blockchain. Really, what we're looking at is, where does this fit into the bigger picture of what's going on in the world?
I'm curious from a personal perspective, and you don't have to give specific numbers or anything, but for you, how are you slicing up your pie with the different vehicles and sectors that you're putting your money into to grow over the next several decades here?
We consider it important to, as part of the strategies we deliver to the vehicles that we work with, we consider it important to conduct diversification, rigorous diversification. So generally speaking, that will include a variety of assets based on market cap. So you have crypto as the overall market, about $1 trillion dollars in value. Of that, you have Bitcoin tends to hover around the 50 to 60% of it mark. And then you have this very long tail from there, where really the top 10 digital assets are, you know, depending on the month or the season, there may be about 70 to 85% of the total market cap. And then from there, it's a kind of a lower and lower, a longer tail. So we consider it important to diversify across high cap, medium cap, low cap, much like you would with the stock market, for example. We also consider it important to for the vehicles that we help operate. We consider it important to diversify across those use cases I was mentioning, such as, you know, potential smart contract platform use cases or AI relevant blockchain use cases. There's various others out there. Also consider it important to diversify across the systems and the services that are being used in conjunction with the assets managed, where you know, something like a something like an FTX, there were institutions that say parked all their money with FTX because you know, they were the golden children and they were on, you know, Time Magazine and all this stuff, or Forbes, but really diversifying the risk in especially in an emerging asset class can come down to having a plan A and a plan B and a plan C and then some.
For you, I know you've been helping companies and managing teams for 15 years, worked with companies like Citi and Saks Fifth, some amazing big brands. I'm curious on maybe the biggest lesson or even patterns that you've noticed in working with these different companies that tend to repeat themselves over market cycles that is maybe front of mind for you that you want to share with people or that people should be aware of.
I mean, I would say that, you know, to your point, my background spans everything from early stage startups to more mature small to medium enterprises, all the way to digital transformation initiatives within, you know, billion plus dollar organizations. And I would say that there are some similarities and some differences, you know, across that board. What I've tended to really find most compelling is innovation across those different life cycles. But innovation, to your question, means something different in a 5-person startup than it does in a 300,000 plus person organization like Citi that operates like a nation state. I mean, it's a larger population working for Citi than for, you know, some countries in the world. Yeah. So in that regard, I think that I think it's important for an individual or for an organization to really identify the soul of the company. And that's something that hits on a couple of different notes. I would say that, you know, for a earlier stage organization, there can be a bit more kind of tip of the spear, you know, innovation of doing something for the absolute first time in the market. Whereas someone like a major innovation hub in a billion plus dollar organization is really largely more going to wait to kind of copy what's been working and not do what hasn't been working from those other startups. So within that, I think it's important for, you know, for individuals and for organizations to know, you know, where are their goals, where, how are they best able to help their customers, and what level of innovation do they want or need versus what level of risk. You know, for example, I would say that in the blockchain space, it's been, you know, there was a lot of innovation going on in some smaller organizations, even, you know, 6+ years ago, whereas in kind of the larger banks, it was a lot slower progress. Where, for example, I was working on some blockchain initiatives at Citi 5 or so years ago that only now are starting to kind of see the light of day, you know, in that organization and organizations of its ilk. So thinking through what is the right time cycle for personal goals, for organizational goals, how does that fit into, you know, fit into the value that's being provided to the customers or to the person is important.
Across the blockchain and crypto sphere, or I suppose this digitization transformation on the planet as a whole, is there anything that worries you or that is concerning when you look at the pace of change that's happening right now?
Yes, I would say I am cautious. I think that in general, especially within emerging asset classes, there is strong need for caution. One thing I would say is that in terms of kind of the forces in the world right now, two of the biggest innovations happening out there are blockchain and AI. And I think that in certain ways, they kind of help to balance each other out, where blockchain is, AI, for one thing, is very top down, where it's about kind of big data sets. It's in many ways the kind of larger organizations that are going to prevail the most in AI. Certainly there are exceptions and could kind of argue the smaller points around that. Whereas something like blockchain, more in terms of the soul of what's going on there, is about connecting people, connecting individuals, and is really more of a bottom-up sort of a movement, decentralization, all those sorts of buzzwords, right? But to that point, you have then AI, which is more a bit top-down, and blockchain, which is a bit more bottom-up. And so in terms of kind of fears of destabilization, I think that there are multiple different streams of innovation that to an extent help to balance each other out. In terms of other questions around being concerned around markets and innovation, I think it just generally is really important to consider that all emerging markets pose risk and all emerging markets have posed risk. Mm-hmm. I've found it really fascinating looking into the history of markets and the history of emerging markets, history of scams. For example, the railways back, a couple hundred years ago, that was the Wild West. That was, literally the Wild West. They were building, railroads out in the west of the U.S., and a number of people that we think of as really, smart and powerful fell for scams around railways. Charles Darwin invested into some scams. Isaac Newton, who was, by the way, I think he was worth about $50+ million. He lost millions of dollars in an investment scam around that time period. There was also other stuff like this collateralization of assets in the New World that were being packaged as these kind of hard to understand financial products that went through just massive hype cycles and then were worth absolutely nothing at the end of it and then never even emerged as an asset class. So just bearing in mind that with every innovation, there's explosive growth potential, but then it also opens up for risk. And even the smart, the famous, the wealthy can end up betting on the wrong horses.
Yes, that's such a great point. I think there as technology happens, right, and you see these increasingly more abstract levels of asset classes being created that go quote unquote meta on just some other invisible layer, there can be a tendency for us to want to jump in and jump at something before the majority actually gets there for that arbitrage play. But I've heard so many successful investors say they don't invest in anything that they don't understand or that they don't have advisors who understand who can help them.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's really been a large focus of what I've done in my involvement with blockchain and crypto, where I've been helping with development of reliable content, reliable events online as well as in-person resources to help actually educate people on what's going on in the space. Because there's this combination of kind of some of the powers that be for various reasons not allowing certain content. Let's say, Wikipedia in general has tended to suppress blockchain and crypto content. But then what that ultimately ends up in perversely is that it makes it easier for scam content to really dominate when you don't have reliable sources of info. So in that regard, to your point, either, for people to either know what they're investing in or to work with professionals who know what they're doing, or ideally really both, know everything you need to know and work with people who know even more, is really important in an emerging space. And that starts with education.
That is it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. My book, Content Capitalist, is now on sale. You can visit my website, michaelbecker.org, to grab your copy. There's also a link in the description. And if you'd like to learn more about what me and my team at Neocore are building, you can visit our website, neocore.co. You can learn more there and join the waitlist for when we launch later this year.